Hello, all. A quick programming note about this week's podcast. This is a conversation Lauren and I had with CBF field personnel, Laura and Carson Fushi. It was originally recorded on Tuesday, October 4th, and was going to be posted later that week, but as many of us know, Hurricane Matthew happened and delayed our publication of this podcast. And so some of the things that we talk about and we reference are things that happened not this week, but last week. And so just making a programming note of that, it's a great conversation. And so we hope you enjoy our conversation with Laura and Carson Fushi. Hello and welcome to the First Baptist Church Savannah podcast. And today we've got a really special podcast for you. Some wonderful guests who are pretty familiar with our church family. Carson and Laura Fushi are here on the podcast. So say hello.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, konnichiwa.
Carson, you're giving away where we're going tonight. All right, on the podcast. And Lauren Caldwell joins us.
I'm here.
That's right. We're actually gathered around the table at our house tonight and watching the Weather Channel right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We are watching Hurricane Matthew presently, but we're going to get in some podcast recording before any of that happens. So, Lauren, before we jump in to interviewing Carson and Laura, we had some really great stuff happen this past weekend.
We did.
First off, Laura, you got to preach on Sunday. How'd you feel about it?
It was good. It was... In Japan, I've had the opportunity to preach both with translation and fully in English, but to be back in an American context, which is my home culture, and then in a context where everyone understands English, I think was a big difference in preaching. The being up in the pulpit, though, at First Savannah, was definitely a little intimidating.
It was a great
experience. So, yeah. Thanks for having us.
That pulpit is intimidating sometimes.
Yeah.
And then after church, I mean, we had a great fellowship hour on Sunday, but also picnic in the park happened Sunday night.
It did, yeah. We set up a tent. We got there. We thought we were getting there pretty early, but by the time we did, the park was packed, and we ended up way in the back, right in front of the tennis courts. But we set up our Van Gogh tent with stars and lights, and had a really good spread with barbecue.
Really did.
And different sides and desserts. And several people joined us, so it was a good time.
Yeah, it really was a good time. Carson, Laura, was it good to be a part of something like that?
It was really unique for us. I mean, we love being able to participate in local community life with the churches that we have partnerships with and churches that we're familiar with. And so it was really neat to be able to be a part of just an average evening in Savannah, but, you know, a special, unique event in the Savannah life as well.
Yeah, it was a great event for the women of FBC and the dudes of FBC.
Right.
Even though I guess if you put all that together, you just get FBC.
Right.
But hey, you know, we can call it what we want. So Carson and Laura, since you're joining us tonight, one thing that we do most times when we record the podcast is we have a segment called What You're Into. Or what we're into. And a lot of times it's something like a book, or it's something like a movie, or maybe even like a diet, or something that you're into right now. Okay. And that we just chat about for a moment. So we usually just go around the table and say, this is the thing that I'm into right now. Laura, why don't you start us off then?
This week, I've been doing a lot of extra reading on Japanese tea ceremony, which, believe it or not, gets very detailed.
Wow.
But since that'll be a part of what we do on Wednesday night with First Baptist Savannah, I was doing some extra reading and learning more about the background of
that tea
ceremony.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to sound so American when I say this. When I think of Japanese tea ceremony, I think of Karate Kid Part 2. Because he does one in that movie. So right when you said that, I thought of the scene in Karate Kid Part 2.
That's it. I haven't seen it myself, so I can't say whether or not.
As long
it's
as you
accurate.
Have an image,
that's right.
Yeah, that's a good
right.
start. Yeah.
So what did you learn from this, though? I mean, what was the original purpose of that?
Well, tea came from China and India into Japan, and the tea ceremony in Japan is their version and really their etiquette around serving tea.
Hmm.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about it was how it developed to really be accessed by all classes. Huh. It wasn't something that was only limited to the upper class or the feudal lords, but really everyone had access to tea. So it's something that they could participate in. So that was one of the interesting things that I learned.
That's really cool.
This week. Yeah.
And it's really intricate, like how you turn the glass or serve the glass.
Yes, and I read today there are actually about 37 steps in serving the tea that involve wiping or cleaning different instruments or where to place them at certain times. And that's just in the preparation to serve. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't necessarily include what the guest has to do. And like you said, turning the cup or things like that. So
we're not going to do all those on Wednesday night.
Right. I am not qualified.
All 37 steps. Yeah,
we are not studied masters.
Yeah. As I was reading the list, it's about 37 steps.
That's really cool. That's fascinating. Awesome. Carson, you got anything?
Yeah. So, this week, my personal trainer and friend, Lauren Colwell, introduced me to P90X.
Oh, yes.
It's tail kicking fun. So,
it's hard.
It's really hard. Yeah. So, I've been looking, as Laura and I are traveling around the Southeast, visiting congregations like First Baptist Savannah, who are good partners with us in our missional journey. I have been trying to figure out a way that I can do a workout plan and to balance all the really poor eating that I'm doing as we make our way through the delicious Southeast. And so Lauren introduced me kindly to P90X, and it is kindly causing me lots of soreness.
Yeah, and it will.
So I don't know if I'm into it or if it's into me at this point.
Josh really loves P90X yoga. You haven't done that one yet.
Let me tell you. I did P90X a few times, and the first time I did it, about day three, I thought, "Oh my gosh, this is so hard!" Like I'm like you, Carson. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Man, this is just really beating me up.
It's painful."
And then I got to Thursday, and I got to the hour and a half yoga. And I thought, it was just bad. It was just really bad. I had never done yoga before, and so I didn't know the moves, and I got really frustrated at how fast they were moving, and it was just, it was not a good scene in the living room at the Brewer House.
Okay.
It's really frustrating.
Thursday's coming.
Get ready.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Now, after I did it a couple of times, I knew the routine, and it was fine, but that first time was just, man, it was really
we're
frustrating.
2 days in.
Yeah, that's right. Some people don't even make it to Thursday.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
88 to go, I believe.
Yeah,
that's true.
So what I'm into this week is a podcast. Shocking. Okay. Podcasts are something I listen to almost every day. It's almost how I get my news more than like watching television. And the podcast that I'm into is a podcast called The Liturgist, which is a fantastic podcast put on by two people. One's name is Michael Gunger. He used to be a singer, a musician, along with his wife, Lisa Gunger. And the other one is a guy named, his nickname is Science Mike. And the two of them do a podcast together talking about different Christian issues. And it is wonderful. Wonderful podcast. They do the podcast every week, and I cannot suggest it enough for people. If you are a podcast person, boy, find them, download it on your phone. It's a wonderful podcast. That is what we are into this week. So if you want to go out and get P90X and join Carson on his journey of pain, you can do that.
So I guess I'm into being a personal trainer,
that's
apparently,
right.
And into hosting friends, so that's fun too.
Right. Well, all of us, I think, right now are into the Weather Channel.
That's a good point. Absolutely.
And probably will be most of this week. So, like we said at the top of the podcast, our guests this week are Laura and Carson Fushim, originally from North Carolina, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so they're going to tell us a little bit about their journey and what they're doing now as CBF field personnel. So before we even jump into what you're doing now, tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story, how you met, and Yeah, we'll just start right there.
Well, as Josh said, we're both from North Carolina, but that's not where we met. We actually met in Atlanta as seminary students at McAfee School of Theology. Oh, yeah. So
you better watch those seminary students.
That's right.
Especially McAfee students.
So I'm originally a graduate of North Carolina State University. And after I graduated, I took a year off and worked at the Passport National Office in Birmingham for a year, and then started at McAfee. Carson followed behind a year later, so I was a year ahead of him at school. But I guess our first meeting was when Carson came for a preview conference, and I was working in the admissions office, so I was technically recruiting him to come to McAfee, and he ended up there.
Yeah, it's good for him.
And wonder why.
Who was your roommate there at
My
McAfee?
Roommate at McAfee was Lauren Caldwell.
Yeah.
So we lived together for 2 years, and yeah, it was a good experience.
And we originally met working Passport together.
Yes. As for me, I also, like Laura said, grew up in North Carolina and attended Elon University. Was a major in sport management, so of course I moved into theology later in life.
Of course, of course. Now, Carson, before we move on, what is Elon again? What's their mascot?
The Elon Phoenix.
Okay.
We have been rising from the ashes since 1889.
Is that a slogan there?
No.
Okay.
It should be, though.
It sounds like one.
So after Elon, in my last year at Elon, I was doing the "What am I going to do next?" dance that all college seniors do, and we talk about call experiences and missions, and that was a call experience for me during the Christmas Eve worship service of my senior year. I was sitting with my family on the back pew of my home church in Statesville, North Carolina. There's an hour of music before hour-long Christmas Eve worship. Wow. And during that hour of music, I felt this call to do something that looked different than what I had been doing in college and to reflect upon the missional experiences I had been introduced to in middle school, high school, during my college years, and so look a different direction. And so I came upon CBF's student.go mission program. Okay. And at that point, started to look through the opportunities and was fascinated by an opportunity in southern China, working with field personnel there. I was a language student there for about half a year, just learning some Chinese and building relationships with other students, international and Chinese there. And that really led me into seeking out a theology degree at McAfee, and that's where Laura and my story started to come together. Along the way, I've also served with Student.go in other locations around the world. Right before I started seminary, I served on a 13-person team that we looked at the Millennium Development Goals of the United Nations from a faith-based perspective, so working with field personnel and often faith-based organizations outside the United States. We started in Washington, D.C., learning about advocacy, and then we went off to Romania to work with some folks who are working with the Romani Gypsies, especially around the issue of education, often discrimination in the education for the Romani in Romania, followed by Ethiopia, where we learned about some health issues that are affecting people there. Also, we worked on water wells with David Harding, who is CBF field personnel. He does that project, but also disaster relief with CBF. That was followed by work with Jade and Sheila Acker, CBF field personnel in Uganda. We worked with people who have been affected by war and conflict. A lot of refugees in Uganda coming from surrounding nations because it's a more stable nation than many of their home. That then led us to New York City, where we went to the UN and met with UN officials and also met with CBF field personnel Ronnie Adams, who is dealing with HIV and AIDS issues there in the city in Hell's Kitchen out of Metro Baptist Church. And then
Rauschenbusch Center.
That's right, the Rauschenbusch Center. And then we followed that with a trip to Nicaragua, where we learned about how U.S. policy affects Central American nations and trade deals, things of that nature affect Central American nations, and did homestay in village and learned what village life was like in Nicaragua. And then the last stop before we ended in the great city of Birmingham, Alabama, was to go to the UN AIDS conference in Mexico City. And so we were listening.
And this was all with student.
This was five countries, 7 weeks, a team of 13 students. students from all around the Southeast, really, through Texas. And they were a student who had just graduated undergrad through a few of us who were either in or heading to graduate programs of different kinds. Those folks are working in nonprofit life now. They are working as one student is now a doctor. I'm now serving in field personnel capacity. So it's interesting to see where people have gone. But during my seminary experience, I also went on to Indonesia and did an immersion experience there, working with two sets of field personnel at that time. Some of that was, again, with water filtration systems, and then also working with First Baptist Savannah supported Jonathan and Tina Bailey. And so I spent a couple weeks with them learning about what it meant to be among the Balinese and learning about local arts and how those ministry could be a part of that local life. And then, finally, Laura and I started to eventually talk about what life might look like beyond seminary for the two of us, with Laura with a calling in the local church and mine looking more at the global church.
So how did you two bring these two callings together to be where you're at now?
Yeah, we had a lot of conversations as our dating became more serious and we were talking about marriage. How do two people who are called to ministry but in different capacities, what does that look like? And how can we both encourage and support one another in our own individual callings? And so we kind of landed on it would all work out, whether it was doing it together or whether it was sometimes following Carson's call and sometimes following mine. But my last year of seminary, we actually received in our student mailboxes information on a position in Japan that we both looked at and said, this is something that we could see fitting both of us because it was very much tied to the local church, which was where I felt called. But we weren't even married yet, and we said, well, maybe something like this down the road would be great. But we really didn't think much about it. As it turned out, that position was never filled. And so a year into our marriage, I was on a conference call and learned that they were still looking for full-time field personnel to fill that position. And this was a position that was done in partnership with the Japan Baptist Convention, which has a partnership with CBF. And so we decided to begin looking at that and pursuing it and seeing what that might look like for us as a couple. So that journey started early 2012, and that's when we began the process with CBF.
So what does that process look like? What does the process of becoming a CBF field personnel look like?
For us, that process started with really just exploration. So it was several months of being in a group of other people who were also interested in missions with CBF and serving in that capacity. And so it was a time for us to see if CBF was a good fit for us, and for CBF to see if we were a good fit for them. We did a lot of reading, reading different articles, talking about it online with other people in our group. And then after that, we were invited to do a more formal interview process. And at that time, we were doing everything from psychological evaluation to continuing those theological conversations and missiological conversations with people in the office, and then looking at specific job descriptions as well.
So how does CBF prepare you for that? I mean, there's certain mission entities and organizations that, gosh, you have to, like, basically go on retreat for like half a year before you go or something. So what does that look like from the CBF side?
We did a lot of stuff from where we were. Of course, a lot of people are located in, you know, all different regions. So a lot of what we did was, you know, utilize technology to do it from afar. We had a couple of times where we were called into the office for in-face meetings, and that was good. But our training included everything from continuing to study missiology, cultural exchange, and what it's like to live in a different culture, and then also fundraising and how to do that. That's a big part of getting on the field is being able to make sure that you have the ability and the resources to do so.
And as far as, I mean, at that point, the decision had been made that we were moving to Japan and that we would be fundraising for Japan. So obviously CBF encouraged us to read about where we would be going. We are the first CBF field personnel to go to Japan.
Any part of Japan.
That's right. That's correct. Since CBF has been an organization, we have not sent full-time field personnel to Japan. This was this partnership with the Japan Baptist Convention only started in 2008 with an MOU that was signed at General Assembly in Houston that year. And so we are very much kind of on the forefront of this partnership with the JBC. And so a lot of this learning that we've been doing has been on the ground learning. So it's any information that we can find, whether it's cultural information, you know, books about, so you're moving to Japan, those kind of books, or any, you know, Christian history books. We're constantly asking questions and reading things about that. I am a Twitter user, and I'm always following this kind of fun account called Rocket News. And so it's just kind of weird things that happen in Japan or around East Asia. And so I always want to know, you know, some of the fun side of what's going on around our country. And so it's been a lot of on-the-ground learning as we've kind of learned culture and language. We're very much kind of experiencing it firsthand.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, how much did the So You're Moving to Japan books really help?
It's a good question.
You know, I mean, there's things you read in books, and then when you're actually in the situation, it's like, that was true, but this is
totally think different. If we had moved to Tokyo originally, it would have been very relevant. It feels like some of these books are the only people they have in mind are people who are moving to Tokyo or Osaka. And so moving to a city like Kanazawa, where we have been the last 3 years, and where we just wrapped up our first project in Japan. A city of 500,000 is a radically different experience. So much more, it's a much more richer cultural life, very much more traditional. And so not exactly the same as the, you know, Tokyo of 30 million people. So there are some topics that were helpful, and then some we said maybe another day we'll actually understand what they're talking about.
I think for me, it was also a difference in reading about it and experiencing it. So I think I read a lot of things that I did experience, but I didn't remember reading them at the time, you know, so I would experience it and go back and look at some of those books and say, oh yeah, that is exactly the experience that I had. So,
And I mean, that Mario is not running around Tokyo. You're in Japan. You know, Pokemon weren't running around until this year.
That's right,
in Japan.
That's right.
And so, you know, all of these things that we've kind of seen in culture and media over the years weren't quite as relevant when we hit the ground. But it's been challenging, but fun to kind of learn as we go.
So what do y'all do? Like, what is y'all's job in Japan?
Well, we just finished our first term with CBF, and it was written up as a 3-year project, this original work that we were doing. And so there was a church in Kanazawa, again, a city about 500,000. This is the Baptist church, not only in the city, but also in the prefecture, which is more or less a state. That's the, you know, that kind of terminology.
Only
Japan Baptist Convention Baptist Church, yes. And so this church wanted to work as part of the Japan Baptist Convention in inviting some CBF field personnel to come and lead their English ministries, and that included working with their kindergarten. This church itself is 63 years old this year, and the kindergarten is a year younger, so 62.
Oh, wow.
And so they have had, over the course of their lifetime, they were founded by, it was a foreign mission board missionary at the time, 63 years ago. They had another foreign mission board missionary years ago. And so they said, you know, those have been good experiences. We would like a field personnel from CBF to come in and teach our children English in the kindergarten fairly regularly. We also want them to minister to the rest of the family, meet with the mothers, meet the fathers, lead the mothers in English classes. And then also we have this group of internationals and Japanese who are interested in English who are gathering for weekly Bible study and a regular worship service. Please come in and lead these efforts.
So lead the service.
That's right. So come and lead, come and preach in these worship services. resources, come and equip our people and challenge them. And so that was the call. And then a sister church in the prefecture next to us, Toyama Prefecture, in the city of Toyama, which is a little bit smaller than Kanazawa. Again, the only Baptist church in its prefecture. They also said, well, please come also to us and lead an English service once a month, and then also come and teach once a week to mothers and children here. And so that was more or less our life the last 3 years, alongside part-time Japanese study. We went twice a week for an hour. So altogether, we have, 200 class hours over 3 years, which is not a whole lot, but it's something. So that's been our work for the last 3 years.
So did you have any kind of culture shock experiences?
Yes. I think there's a lot that feels familiar about Japan. It's a developed country. So when you think about having your everyday needs met and you have heating and air conditioning and really all of the comforts from home, a lot of times that culture shock isn't immediate. But where we did feel it was a lot with the language. You basically go into a place where you are illiterate. One of my saddest moments, I think, was just trying to shop in the grocery store and not being able to read labels or know where things were. And it was just a very stressful situation.
Tears were shed.
just that feeling, of going, from one culture to another and immediately not being able to read the signs in front of you was a lot of culture shock.
Knowing what was in front of us at the Subway restaurant and not being able to order that vegetable because you didn't know what it's called in Japanese. Pointing didn't seem to work.
That got easier over time as we were able to begin to read some of the alphabets or just know what tools we had access to, different apps that we could use to help with that. Beginning to have conversation skills enough to ask store clerks where things were. It did get a lot better, but initially that was a big culture shock.
I think one that hit us very quickly was a lot of people work 6 days a week, and we were included in that group. And so one holiday day a week is a very challenging work life after spending most of our working lives working 5 days a week. We both had travel jobs before, and so we weren't unaccustomed to working on a weekend and having working church life also. We had worked on weekends before, but 6 days a week was our regular schedule, as was the case for many of our friends in the church and our friends in the community. And so finding time outside of that one Sunday worship service, or it was very difficult to find that time with people. It's also hard whenever you're leading a church in that setting. So we're leading an international worship service and, we're meeting twice a month, and just getting people together to be able to practice for music is very challenging. Transportation furthers that issue whenever most of the people that we worked with were either university undergraduate, graduate students, or teachers. And so they're working long, late hours. Many of them don't have a car to speak of, so they're traveling by bus, maybe in by train from outside the city. And so church life looked very different. So that was a shock for us as well. How do we do ministry well here?
Just saying, hey, we're going to practice on Wednesday at 6.
That's right. It does not work.
Much harder to deal with, it sounds like.
And especially cram school is also a big part of Japanese
cram
life.
Cram school.
Yeah, it's a good point. So cram school basically would be our after-school tutoring. But much more intense. You have more or less a cram school teacher that would be teaching to a class or maybe to individuals.
Now, when you say cram, is it the same connotation that we think of, where it's like, oh crud, we've got to test in 2 hours, so I'm cramming?
But more like just regular school. It's like a second. It's almost like
setting.
A second school day.
But it's geared toward their entrance exams that they have to take, particularly the one that will determine which college or university you attend.
But younger than that, junior high school and high school also have entrance exams.
So it's going to school for a full day, and then after that, going to another cram school.
Going even more.
To study whatever you didn't cover earlier that day that's going to help you for the test. So
some of the folks who were involved with our English worship life were cram school teachers, and so they were working evenings, Saturdays. So the challenge of bringing people together was a culture shock for us.
So what does a typical week look like for you all?
Well, our week starts with worship on Sunday. So usually that involved a Japanese service as well as an English service or English event. So
now, were y'all leading in both of those?
Yeah, sometimes. On the fourth Sunday of every month, we were preaching in the Japanese service with translation. So we always had a monthly preaching responsibility, as well as in our other church in Toyama. So we split that responsibility. And then the English services, we had three a month between the two churches. We were preaching in those as well. So,
are you not translated in those?
We're not, no. We had to have
someone who spoke Southern to be able to come and translate to the
what y'all mean.
Lots of people who English was their second language.
Yeah, it did create a different preaching experience, as I alluded to before, because even though the room was full of people who understood English at some level, being able to simply speak or speak at a pace where people you know, were able to pick up on the words that you say. Right.
And figure out what colloquial phrases that we know that don't communicate in
so, yeah, so some of the immediate illustrations that might come to mind during sermon preparation, I would have to filter out and say, does that resonate with people outside of America?
Right. Well, further still, people who don't even have Christian backgrounds. We had people who people of other faiths that joined us regularly for a Christian worship service or no faith. And so how do you make this relevant to everybody in the room at the same time and for many of them in a second language? It was a unique challenge.
So Mondays were usually our planning day. So that was the day that we would usually go to Starbucks and do sermon preparation or plan our English classes. We didn't plan anything on our schedule on Monday so that we could prepare for the week. And then Tuesday through Friday included everything from attending kindergarten classes and teaching English there to teaching Wednesday afternoons in Toyama to mothers and children, taking Japanese classes ourselves, and
we also regularly try to take out folks who we were either connected to in the Japanese community or the international community, and just have those check-in, how are you doing kind of times. We had so many people who also were balancing this is my first time outside of the country experience. Some of them, I've just graduated college and I'm taking this teaching job, and so now I'm trying to learn how to do adult life and international life at the same time in Japan. And so
Adult
life is hard enough. And so, you know, we had lots of those conversations about, oh, these are the great things about Japan. These are the things that grind my gears conversations. And so we had those kind of conversations, but really just an opportunity to spend time with people. Because like I said, the work schedule was so hard to work around. We tried to make sure that, especially with some of the funds that we raised along the way to do our work, we said we want some of these funds that CBF churches are giving us, and individuals who are supporting us back home are giving us, we want this to go to fruitful conversations as well. So our goal was about once a week to take out someone or meet, you know, whether it's for coffee or for a meal.
In your experience there in the last 3 years, so what does Christianity look like in Japanese culture? Or well, I'll just let y'all take that question.
Sure. In terms of the overall culture, I think that generally Christianity has a good reputation.
That's right.
Although out of the total population, it's anywhere from, we've heard less than 1%, 1%, 2% of the population claiming Christianity as their faith. A lot of missionaries and missionary organizations of the past have done a really good job of building good schools and good hospitals and those social kinds of ministries that the community can put its trust in. And for all the churches that have kindergartens like ours, I mean, most of those kindergartens are full of people who are not Christians themselves. The families are not Christian, but have had themselves, like the parents have had a experience with Christian schools or organizations, and they know that their children will be taught good values. And so, yeah, it's very easy to find people who want to put their children in a Christian kindergarten or school. So there really is no, you know, we were we could be very open about being missionaries, mm. probably more open than we would be in America, because that's that word can be so loaded mm-hmm. here. Yeah. And so we felt like, you know, in the within the larger culture, Christianity has a good reputation. In terms of walking into a Japanese worship service, it would probably feel very familiar to most Americans. Mm. It felt like a traditional Baptist church singing some of the same hymns, but mm-hmm. just in Japanese. And so a lot of the nuances for with Japanese culture happen in decision making or in small things like our pastor bowing to the congregation at the end of the service.
So do y'all do that too? Is that something that's expected of y'all?
No, we never did it. It was not expected of us. And I never felt like
I could do it. We did a bow during the greeting. We would greet people with a bow from the pulpit. I think that one of the things that I found very interesting about our roles, especially when I told people that I was a Senkyoshi, a missionary, a minister there, was the response I got from some of the people who were around our age who I played basketball with. So young people know that Christianity exists, but the number of young adherents in Japan would probably look a lot like what's happening in America, and so more of a disinterest in religious life. But you know, they were very welcoming of me, very open for any kind of conversation that we could get through together in my limited Japanese, their limited English. But whenever I told them what I did, well, they said, "Oh, so you do weddings." Huh. Because the image is from the movies that a minister does weddings. Huh. And so that is the image that a lot of Japanese young people have.
Because so I guess in movies, that's exactly where you would most commonly see ministers. Yeah, that makes sense.
And to the point that Japanese culture has accepted the Western wedding, they have wedding chapels that are tied to wedding event halls that look exactly like churches.
Huh.
And they hire people to dress in ministerial robes and officiate the ceremonies that often have nothing to do with the church.
Huh.
And so the black tuxedo, the white dress wedding with the minister in the black robe is a very common wedding in Japan without any tie to the Christian church.
Yeah.
And so that was the response I would get is like, oh, so you do weddings. And I said, well, yes, I've done one, but we do weekly worship, which is also a different thing for Japanese people because they would often have altars and their homes if they do adhere to any, you know, whether it's the Shinto faith, which is more of a Japanese native faith, or the Buddhist faith, which was inherited from other parts of East Asia, that would be in the home, but a weekly worship service would be very unusual for them. So congregational singing is a very abnormal thing for Japanese people. And going to hear a weekly message is very unusual. A lot of the people that we interacted with on a daily basis, their experience with religion would often happen if their children are being dedicated in the shrine when they're younger. There are certain ceremonies when they're children. They might have a wedding at the Shinto shrine, and then they would know about the death rites in Buddhism with the sutras that are spoken at death. And that's really their experience probably in more of a corporate setting.
Yeah.
And so the church is a very unique place.
So when we think about the Japanese churches looking somewhat Western, because that was what they received with new missionaries coming over, you can kind of see two sides of it. There's one, as Carson was saying, it looks very different than what the traditional Japanese religion would look like. Yeah. So more, you go to the shrine or the temple to pray on your own as you need to, but the corporate setting is not always there on a regular basis. Mm. But also, from what Carson was saying too about the popularity of Western culture in Japanese life, the church looks very different, and it's trendy to look different. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of see both sides, not Japanese.
Okay.
So we
find, you know, restaurant names in English, that sort of thing, something that looks different than the rest of society.
Right. Pop music.
Young people will wear crosses because they see it in R&B culture.
Huh.
So that sort of thing is accepted, but the meaning behind them often is not. To the point that actually one of our favorite things about Christmas in Japan is there's this image of romanticism that exists among the among the candlelight Christmas Eve service.
Really?
And so it's known that some Japanese couples will go to candlelight service after dinner for a romantic evening on Christmas Eve. And so, you know, our goal in the church is that they hear something that they haven't heard before, right, and that they might come back. But that is very much an image of some people, that this romantic candlelit Christmas Eve service is something that they should attend. So,
Lauren, maybe we can make that our selling point.
Right, yeah,
that's our marketing strategy this Advent for the candlelight service.
Advent date night.
That's right.
So the church is not at all, it's not fully foreign to the Japanese people. It's just not a part of daily life for most people. So, which makes the Christian community itself a very unique group, I believe, because, like I said, Sundays are really the day off for many people.
Yeah.
Some, depending on your job, you might get Saturday, you might get Monday, but Sunday is really kind of the holiday for everyone, more or less. And so people spend their entire day there. That's not only just because of the church committee meetings that have to happen and all the events that can happen on Sundays. It's because people seek that Christian community that they don't get during the week. And so you're not running across many Christians, even in your own family. When we first went to Kanazawa Church, we saw lots of people sitting by themselves. And so we thought, oh, they must be single. Well, that wasn't the case. They have families. They're just the only Christian in their family. And so when you encounter that opportunity every week to spend time with people who share the same faith as you, it makes it that much tighter of a community and a place that you want to be on Sundays. So that's the Christian community in Japan is very inspirational for us. They want to have lunch together. They don't, you know, growing up in my little hometown, it was let's rush out the door to get to the buffet, know. And our churches, at least that we've interacted with in our region and then in other Baptist churches, the goal is to spend time with those people, stick around, everybody has lunch together, following Bible study, and continue the conversations that you've been having this morning with people who understand you maybe better than the rest of the population.
So what has Japan taught you?
I think one of the things that I'm still learning is what Christianity looks like in another culture, and being able to reflect myself on, as an American, as a Christian, what parts of my faith are American, or that my perceptions are, my opinions are American. And so that doesn't always translate in another culture. And so I think for me, it's been really interesting to see how Japanese Christians also live out their faith as Japanese people and their perspectives.
Do you find yourself acutely aware of some ways that, you know, your American Christianity are the way you think about certain things? You're like, oh, wait, that is very informed by my American experience.
I think one of the first things I realized was my inclination to want to market things and promote things in a certain way. And I think we've had to do that a lot in America because you're not the only option.
Right.
Your church has to stand out and be different from the one next door, offer different programs. And so certainly a lot of that stuff has mattered. And having a website for our English service was a great way to connect people. And a lot of the people who began coming to our service found us on the internet or Facebook. But it just wasn't at the level that it is in America,
it is here,
right? Which it's so I think that, you know, even that I was able to relax a little bit and say, wow, like it's not all about how we market things. It's really more about the community and how people feel when they get plugged in.
I think one of the things that I've been learning, I like how you say that, I haven't learned it yet, I'm learning, is just a deeper appreciation for nature. I think that the typical image of Japan that you see on the restaurant wall is, you know, the cherry blossom tree and the person sitting below it and these natural scenes. And there is just there's a different way that the Japanese respect nature than the way that I have it, than I experience and I think probably treat the nature around me. And so, you know, when we were in our city that we've just left Kanazawa, we were about a 5-minute walk from a river just below. And you know, in some places I've been in Asia, you don't want to go close to the river. That's, you know, there's lots of things dumped in there and that sort of thing. And that it's the exact opposite in Japan. I mean, we had cranes in the middle of our city. We've got cranes living in the river. There's fish. So people are out there fishing in the middle of the river. It's a healthy ecosystem, you know. And so it's healthy to run around. There's no smog in the air because Japan has lots of emission requirements on their cars. And so you don't see trash because people respect the space around them. You also don't see trash cans, which was really surprised me.
Interesting.
People carry their trash back to either to their homes or to the convenience store that has the trash can. And so you take responsibility for the space around you and appreciate the nature that is there. And so there's something deeply spiritual for me about that and respecting, you know, the world around us. And so that's something that I'm still trying to wrap my mind around. My favorite story actually tied to that is that during the Rio World Cup, Japan, I think, just got defeated by a few goals in the game that they had just played. And so the fans are still in the stadium and they're preparing to leave and they see that other people have left trash. And so the Japanese fans then proceed to go around the stadium and start picking up the trash that everyone else has left.
Wow.
And so there's just something unique in the Japanese mind about cleaning the space that's around you.
So what's next for you all?
Well, after the last 3 years and kind of reflecting on what is next for us and trying to discern and pray about that, we really felt called to stay in Japan, but we knew that continuing our language study would be very important and vital to being able to do ministry long term there. So when we have a long term presence, that includes being fluent in the language and then also continuing to acquire culture as well. So we have been invited back by our local partners, the Japan Baptist Convention, to do probably a 2-year language study term so that we can get our level up enough to be able to work fully in Japanese. And during that time, we'll be working with them on a future assignment. So we're not exactly sure what that's going to look like, beyond language study. But we're excited that hopefully we'll be able to respond to the needs of the Japan Baptist Convention, the needs of Japan as they see fit over the next couple of years. So we'll probably still have relationship with either one church or several churches, and maybe even some social ministries along the way as well. So we're excited to see where that might take us. But well, we'll be studying language every day for the next couple of years, starting in April.
In a city of, what did you say, 3 million
30
people?
Million.
30 million. 30 million. Wow.
So a quarter of the population of Japan lives in one metropolitan area.
Wow.
It's really massive. But it has been named the safest metropolitan area in the world.
Really?
Wow. It is safe. It is clean. Come visit.
And so I should expect that we should have some Skype conversations with you all in
Absolutely.
The future.
Of course. We'd love to keep you up to date and share more about even what we're learning about living in Tokyo and how that's compared to our first 3 years in a smaller city.
Well, First Bed of Savannah has been so faithful to us over the last few years, and not just checking in, but saying, how can we help?
Yeah.
And so we've been so thankful for all of the gifts that you've provided us over the last few years that have equipped us to do God's work in Japan.
Wow, thank you. It's our pleasure. And y'all get to start that next year.
Right. So the language school semester would start in April.
Okay.
So we're hoping to leave maybe the end of March to have some time to get settled, get over jet lag,
and buy furniture, appliances, start a life in a small Tokyo apartment.
That's right.
Get geared up for several years of full-time study.
But y'all get to spend the holidays here.
That's right.
Yes.
Get to see some family a few months.
Yes. So we'll be working our way through Georgia up until Thanksgiving, and then around the holidays and early in 2017, we'll be spending time in North Carolina churches as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, Carson, Laura, thank you for joining us. Thank you for taking the time out of your vacation, I guess we could call it that, to stop in and record with us. As always, you can follow FBC Savannah on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Instagram if you'd like to. I think, Carson, you posted a nice little picture of us recording this podcast. So
that's right.
You could follow Carson on Twitter if you want to. And what's your handle?
CFOUSH, CFOUSH.
Okay. Well, until next time, hope everyone has a wonderful week, and hope to see you Sunday. We're out.